Welcome to Nonproductive, your weekly show for everything that is important in your geek life. This episode, we're going to be talking about the biggest news of last week, which was the now confirmed leak. Of the Colin Trevorrow?
Trevorrow.
Thank you. I'm not going to correct it. So Trevorrow of a version of episode 9 entitled Duel of the Fates. We have this confirmed. I guess let's do some housekeeping first. I'm your host, Frank. I'm joined by your other hosts, Al, Matt, and Pete. How you doing, folks? How you guys doing?
Hanging in there.
Doing great.
And you all did a little bit of research. You've checked out the assigned reading for this week.
Yep.
All right. So a little bit of house cleaning here. We are not. How do we put this? It's Star Wars, and it's 2020. You have to do this. We're not jerks.
Yeah.
We're not going to be jerks about it. I think we did an episode a while back on Al's suggestion about toxic fans.
Yeah.
And I think we may have to do a second episode. Because I do think it's complicated. And I was telling the guys before the show, I may have undersold it back in the day. I think back in the day, I thought toxic was like, if you were racist or sexist, you're toxic. I think now you could be toxic if you're just jerky about anything.
Yep.
Liking it, hating it, whatever it is. Not letting people have their own opinions. Insisting your opinion is law for everyone, all these things can make you a toxic.
Starting petitions and
petition. I'll tag on that and say, like, sometimes the petitions are jokes and people don't read them as jokes, and then people take those too seriously and get very angry.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like fandom is a mess, but we are the only last surviving good source of fun times for you out there, the listeners.
We're trying, guys.
We're good. Everybody else is bad. Yeah. Don't trust anybody else. And speaking of not trusting anyone else, there is only one source for this leak. It is confirmed.
Yes.
Other sources confirmed it. I think AV Club and a couple other places independently verified it's real.
This is true.
But only one person read this script, had access to the script, read it, reviewed it. We'll talk a little bit about him in a minute. So everything we're going to be talking about it's shaded by the fact that we did not, of course, see the movie. We didn't even read the script.
They didn't make the movie.
We've listened to a person who read the script and his opinions about it. So Robert Meyer Burnett. This is the media landscape we're in now. Not only does everything like rage fueled, everything has to be like a chip on your shoulder, anger. But when this news dropped, maybe two dozen YouTube videos were about this thing. Every major geek media outlet put out an article about it. Every major film outlet, Variety, I think, put out an article. Everyone did. Everyone, and like maybe 30%, if that, source the actual place that this information came from, which is the YouTube video Robert Meyer Burnett put out. He's a filmmaker, and he has a podcast, a video podcast. It's pretty entertaining. A little background on this person. He has a history. He is a filmmaker. He started off as a script reader. I think that's one of his earlier jobs. And his podcast is mostly about the background of filmmaking. He's not an angry Star Wars hater, a professional Star Wars hater. You know those people
who have
YouTube channels that all they do is talk about how things are bad. He's not one of those people. He happens to be talking about Star Wars now, but he is a genre fan, I think. Yeah. It's pretty fair to say.
But he's not just a generic fan.
He knows what he's talking about.
He knows what he's talking
an
about. And it's an industry from an industry perspective.
Oh, that's good.
as opposed to just being like like every other video out there, and arguably this podcast, just somebody who's reduxing what he put out.
Yeah. It's really weird. Like it's actually a funny. It's a meme at this point where it's I made a thing, then somebody comes and takes it. Like, observes it, grabs it, and says, I made this thing now.
Yeah, this is my thing now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's very weird. We were going to put all the credits. Most of the articles that do any attempt to source, credit the source, credit Reddit, which is ridiculous because Reddit, literally the thread that from 16 days ago at the time of this recording, links to
the video.
And like that's not Reddit source. This is one person, Robert Meyer Burnett, who did this, and it's pretty interesting. But it also, of course, means another caveat: nobody here has even read the script. Screw the movie. And movie itself, like, you can go from having a solid script to having a mediocre movie. It's all about the execution.
Yeah, and right.
We'll never know what this movie was like.
I mean,
like,
I think even he says in the video, like, I had read The Phantom Menace before it was a film.
Yeah,
and
right.
I read that very differently than when I actually saw the film itself. And, like, from my perspective, it was going to be a great film. And
something. Right, and maybe to his opinion, it didn't quite deliver in all the things he thought right. It could have been.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, for the record, before we go any further, we should say there are going to be some spoilers for this movie that probably will never get made.
Yes, if you're really optimistic, don't listen further.
We say that, like, it probably won't ever be a movie, but, like, they did make a comic book out of the original Star Wars script. So it's
the Star Wars.
It's within the realm of possibility that maybe some years down the line, this could get turned into
it
a comic book.
It might be sooner than later, depending on how they want to play off this and, like, cash in on this.
I could see it being a comic book. I could.
Yeah.
And so a lot of things, just as a, overall, this draft came in December 6, 2016. So it was a week before Carrie Fisher's death. Years of working on it. I think about 2 years of writing would be at this point. And plenty of time before this movie came out, the Rise of Skywalker from just 2019. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of conjecture on what this film could have been, how much of it was made, why did these guys get writing credit, how much of that story was of what we saw on the screen a couple of weeks ago in theaters, how much of that was from the original script, and a surprising amount was from that original story. And a surprising the script that Trevorrow made is relatively complete, it seems.
Mm.
So amazing. We have the opening. We're not going to do a play by play because you could watch that video. It's 2 hours long. It's an excess of 2 hours long, but it's worth it, especially if you want as close to first. I mean, that would be first hand knowledge of what the script was like from at least one person. This is second generation removed. So we're not going to do that.
If you're writing a term paper, this is a secondary source.
Thank you. Wow, great. I knew that would be useful. So we get the opening scroll and the basic concept. This is the big thing I pulled away from the recap. This movie, Duel of the Fates, feels like a sequel to Last Jedi and Force Awakens. It feels like a narrative story that goes on.
Yeah, it's definitely felt like this was more tightly connected with, like, the ending of Last Jedi and the fallout of the Last Jedi.
It's almost shocking.
It is kind of shocking. It was like how very much different than what we actually got. And honestly, while I was like reading the summary and like listening to the video, it was kind of like in the back of my head. It's like, wow, they must have changed a whole bunch in what we finally got, like, just to get from like this like direction into our direction.
It's shocking.
I'm just wondering
to see how complete this story was compared to what. I'm not saying Rise wasn't complete, and this isn't going to come off. I don't want this podcast to come off sounding like this was great and the other one was terrible, and there's no in between. You'll find out at the end maybe what we think about both. But it felt like I was led to believe that there wasn't a consistent story, and then maybe Colin had gone completely off script, and they were like, "We can't do this movie. We can't make this movie. It's not a Star Wars movie. Bring in JJ, rewrite it." And that doesn't feel like this. This, even as a bulleted points, this makes sense. The first major part of this story is effectively the Resistance. So it takes up after Last Jedi. The First Order is clamping down on all these planets. They've stopped communication between various planets. It's right after Kylo Ren is still Supreme Leader. It's literally just taking that narrative thread and moving on. And Leia is leading the Resistance, who are super ragtag and don't have a lot of support, just like we left them off at the end of Last Jedi.
Right.
And, you know, also off of Force Awakens with the whole, you know, blowing up all the remains of the Republic. I think the first action piece is I almost refer to it as a heist movie, but that's not correct. I think the way Burnett refers to it as man on a mission movie is probably sounds like it's it's cool. It feels like an RPG. And it's right. When they're going to the Kwat shipyards, which is an awesome
head nod. I mentioned this on like the non-pro fan club where like when this was first brought up, but like I was honestly like gobsmacked like at a mention. Like I guess to put it in context of if you're not familiar with the Star Wars expanded universe, the Kwat shipyards was a location. It might have been like a West End game creation.
Right.
It might have been something from way back then where like they created.
I remember
like,
from TIE Fighter, the video game.
Yeah, but like I think a lot of it was from the West. Like they took all that stuff from the West End. So
yeah, probably.
It was probably that. And but like that's where they make all like the Star Destroyers, like the main like big ship of the, like the Imperials and now the First Order. And so it was something that you wouldn't really know or care about if you didn't care about the expanded universe. But if you did follow the expanded universe, that is like a really a big thing to know about. So it was very much probably one of the biggest fan service. Yeah, that was like threading the needle between like a fan service.
To give a little bit of context on that or perspective. It's like as somebody who knew about the Kwat yards, it surprises me now that we're talking about it that they were never mentioned in the movies.
Yeah,
yeah. I know another thing. So we're gonna this again. I doubt anybody's gonna click on this file unless they're somewhat Star Wars geeks
right.
And they've already given up on. But like, there's like fan service, and then language is adaptive and weird. There's fan service as a negative, and then there's like a head nod to fans, and I think that's cool. I think having things that are like, hey, this is a like something that gets a little bit of criticism is the Chewie's medal in Rise of Skywalker. Like, what does that mean? We've never heard that Chewie wanted it. Like, that is such a minor part that I think that's fun. I think it was cool, and I like the head nod to the fans. It's fun. I mean, Star Wars could be fun.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. It could be fun. I feel so defensive.
It can always be fun. Yeah, Frank.
I do like the title, the Duel of the Fates.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool reference back to the first movie. Nice.
It seems more synergistic with what they're doing with the other media in Star Wars, because like things like Rebels, the novels, and all the other new Star Wars pieces, they're bringing in stuff from the old expanded universe and integrating it in like new ways into like these new stories.
Yeah.
So seeing this, like it makes it like you mentioned before, it makes this script seem a lot more connected to everything than people would like what was assuming about what was going on with this trilogy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. It seems like it's a little bit more exciting. And cohesive. Mm. So the team that's invading is infiltrating this moon where they build Imperial or First Order battleships is Poe, Finn, Rose, eventually Rey, and BB-8. Yeah, let's hear it.
Can I be a little snide?
Sure.
Already, Rose has more of a part in this movie than the entirety of The Rise of Skywalker.
She has a lot to do in this movie.
Apparently, she was a major player in this, and it's a weird look. It's really weird.
I have no problem people saying, oh, Last Skywalker, Rose was, you know, a part. Okay, cool. Not my favorite character, not my, you know, whatever. That's, you could have, like, you could have less than absolute. Your room doesn't have to be festered with posters of Rose for you to say, no, the character had a role and did some interesting things. Like, was the Resistance character, the person there who preached Resistance while Rey is focusing on her Jedi training and Poe is being a little bit of a wild card and that's his path, his narrative path.
Right.
And Finn, we don't know. Like, Finn's first movie is, I have to hide myself because I don't want to be here, but I don't know where I want to be. Mm. And then the second movie is coming to terms with whether he should be in the Resistance. And this movie feels like just like similar to Rise, but maybe a little bit more maturely done.
Mm.
It feels like the path of this character is dealing with the Resistance and being a Resistance figure. And I think Rose and Finn working in this thing makes a lot of sense. It's odd. I mean, I don't believe anyone had any ill intention in the production of Rise of Skywalker. It just feels really odd. So odd. In the theater, there's a lot of things in the story that made me like grit. it's like grit in the gears of the movie. It's just enough stuff where I'm like, ugh, I could see the seams of this.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that was grit. And I'm like, it's weird that you're doing this. But this story has Rose and BB-8 and the rest of the crew eventually trying to infiltrate this First Order base and ends up with them stealing a Star Destroyer.
That's super cool.
That would have been so fun.
It's fun.
So this this is a thing that comes up again in this thing. We're not doing a blow by blow.
Yeah.
So part of this is that the Resistance, who are very ragtag, still here, just like in The Last Jedi, not so much like in Rise of Skywalker, where they just seem to be back to status quo. But they're a ragtag at this point. They steal a Star Destroyer, and they have a ton of Imperial weapons. So here's something crazy I'm going to put into your minds, and this is what I thought of immediately, and it kind of plays out later on in the story, is... there's a thing going on in Star Wars, another thing, and that thing is that a lot of people like the Empire or the First Order.
Yeah.
People like to dress up like stormtroopers and Imperial folks. Yeah, they have whole weapons.
There's that whole, what is it?
The 501st.
Yeah.
The bad guys always have the best costumes.
And that was true. Like, Pete and I talk about this about He-Man, right?
Yeah.
Don't say historically. That was very bad. But like He-Man, I remember thinking like, man, Skeletor is awesome. He's got a skull for a face.
Yeah.
And as a kid, like, I don't, like, he's a bad guy, but like, and it gets much worse when the fictional bad guys are fascists that are in like proto-German. It's weird. But the way the story goes on when they get to Coruscant and what have you, I hope people aren't listening to this podcast to get the blade by blade. But there's things that happen that makes me feel like you can win back some of this First Order Empire iconography in a way. Like, imagine punk stormtroopers, right? Like, and this comes up, and that's so cool to
me. There's like concept art of like the script around, and they have like ATSTs like punked out with all these like Star Destroyer weapons, and it's almost like some kind of like mishmash, like battle mech, where it's just like a bunch of guns grafted onto a thing with two legs, and it's very punk. It's very
cool, and it's very Warhammer. It looked like it could be very fun.
It would have been a nice aesthetic, and it would, again, like you said, they would have been able to give people like abilities to give more personality to that sort of aesthetic, you know, and just being able to like not just everyone look like a uniform stormtrooper, but like, hey, we can be the good guys too now. It's cool.
Yeah, and it gives people a little bit of that leeway for doing, you know, just engaging with. You have to do some world building, right? That was the point of this last trilogy, is to bring Star Wars back into the point where like you want to see multiple pieces of fiction in this world. And sometimes that's not just cleaning house and tying up things the way Rise did. Sometimes you want to do things that are just like leaving a lot to it.
Yeah.
Give you your imagination place to roam. And I think I want to talk about this a little later when we talk about the First Order coming back. But there are things that Rise did that I think were awesome that you could tie into this, which would be great, because this is, of course, just a draft. We don't know what the final movie would have been.
So we
do go back to Coruscant. Now, you folks you've read this with me as well, and listened to or watched the YouTube video. Coruscant as like the tragic remains of an occupied planet. What do we think about that?
I like it. I think it's a really cool idea that we go back to where the heart of the Republic used to be, and you just see like over the year, the many years, it's fallen into disarray.
There's very much layers to it. I mean, because it was like the symbol of the old Republic, but then it was the symbol of the Empire, but then it became the symbol of the new Republic, after the Empire was defeated. But now it's back to the First Order. There's definitely, I don't know how it would have played out, but it was definitely a lot of opportunity to create a very interesting looking world, a planet torn apart by different four different political political ideologies.
Yeah,
and like there something really neat can be done with that.
Because it would have to be so crazy to be just like this weird sort of like levels of just like, because it was just a city planet. It was a huge city planet.
Yeah.
And like it had like a, like these huge bizarre class structures and just them both eating each other over the process and just kind of being like what's left is this remnants and these like, you know, this one guy, like, because we find out Hux is in charge, just kind of chilling out, just kind of like, I like to pontificate to my subjects when I can.
Hux is a good person to pull into that, yeah.
Yeah, it's I've always had a problem with Coruscant and its believability, just as an entire planet being one big city.
Right.
And I don't know how it would function as it collapses.
I love that the Star Wars, this is a biome planet, applies even to cities.
Cities, yeah.
Yeah. So this is the part where I'm most, like, I do, if it's not obvious already, I kind of like a lot of stuff from the script. This is the one part where I'm like, it really depends. It depends on how you executed this.
Yeah.
Because this could have been like a blink and you miss it, like a white, like a noisy nothingness, or it could be amazing. Stupid. I don't know why this occurred to me. It could be like Fifth Element New York City.
Yeah. Right. I was almost thinking like Judge Dredd.
Or Judge
like Mega City 1.
Or it could have been Coruscant from the prequels.
Yeah.
And I'm not hating on prequels. This is not that kind of show. We don't do the hating thing here. Mm. But like it was Coruscant from the prequels could have been like almost anywhere. It's kind of just vagueness to me in my memories. But like this could have been really neat. I don't know. So dial back a bit, and this is going to be a deep cut. Maybe only Matt and Al will know this. Probably only Matt and Al will know this. But a while ago, when we ran role-playing games at the network, I ran a Star Wars role-playing game.
Right.
I think we used Lady Blackbird as the engine.
Yeah, Lady Blackbird, yep.
I had a scene where we explained why Republic Tech was so much better.
Yes.
Republic Tech, prequel tech, was so much better than like Imperial Tech, which would be the original trilogy. Yeah. And I love that there's a hint of that in this. There's a suggestion because we only get the very quick review that Burnett gave us. But there was a moment where people are like, man, the Republic stuff was so much better than the things we have now. Yeah, it was, because the stuff we have now is based off of the 1977 movie with vector graphics. And the stuff from the Republic were like CGI awesomeness. But I loved the little bit of like the idea that, when the Empire took over, maybe everything was kind of janky.
Yeah.
And it's neat little world building. It could have been a blink and you miss it thing in the script, but it was cool to me. This is also, we get a little bit of the Knights of Ren here. Mm. So Knights of Ren are doing a lot of the chase sequence. I think they're the ones following in Knife 9, our heroes who are fleeing Quat with the stolen Star Destroyer.
And man, I would have liked any amount of more detail on this because they're not mentioned any more necessarily than what they could have been in Rise of Skywalker, like
essentially
just some like upgraded stormtroopers that showed up, and you know, because if I had laid out Rise of Skywalker for you in bullet points and said, and a redeemed Ren shows up at the planet, and like you would have thought that would have been an amazing scene
and fights the Knights of Ren. Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. The bullet points on this we don't know.
Yeah,
all we have, which we kind of already alluded to, is Burnett's take on it.
Mm.
And his opinion, his reading of what the Knights of Ren do, he doesn't give us bullet by bullet, like literal scene by scene. He says it's more interesting. He says it's more...
really sets off every, like, just kind of like, ugh. It, like, I hate it when someone just sort of tells me what I'm supposed to be thinking about something. I'd like, just tell me what it is. Yeah. I'll decide if it's interesting.
Yeah, but keep in mind, verified. He was telling people, like, maybe I made this up. I don't know. I don't want to deal with it. Don't ask me for the script.
That's
not what the point of this is.
Yeah.
I get it. I agree with you. But remember, the script wasn't designed for Burnett to read to us. we don't know. But taking only the opinion of the one person who's ever read this that has talked about it, apparently it was more detailed and more interesting.
Right.
We're not doing bullets by bullets. Kylo Ren in this.
Yeah, Kylo. Yeah, that was very interesting, like, what he was talking about, like, what happens with Kylo. Like, I guess the biggest thing is he really does get redeemed in this one.
No, he does not seem to get redeemed.
He just becomes more of a villain.
Yeah. If you're listening to this podcast to get the bullet points, that's going to be unsatisfying because it's just sort of like, he doesn't get redeemed at the end. He does, a lot of stuff happens to him that I think is...
more along the journey that he was taking at the end of Last Jedi.
Yeah. And more interesting with the asterisks. Yeah. I don't know about this one.
There's some things that happen to him that I'm kind of like, what?
So basically, Kylo Ren is also on a fetch quest in this, but it's a little bit more straight line. Instead of like looking for holocrons, and then other people are looking for the holocrons, and then there's a second holocron, but that holocron gets destroyed, and they find a dagger, and somehow the dagger shows you where to go. Like, there's a lot of inexplicable fetch quests in Rise of Skywalker. According to Burnett, this one tracks better, that everything is a little bit more consistent and straight to the point. There's no wasted real estate. Because
he's looking for essentially just one thing.
In this case, he's the one doing looking, and he's only looking for one thing. He's looking for, if not the Emperor, I think he's looking for the person who trained the Emperor, is the gimmick. And his Kylo Ren's arc here is many interactions with Luke's Force Ghost, who is haunting him, and the words, that sounds really cool. Luke, compared to what Luke does in Skywalker, which is just like, be a little like winky at the camera going, hey, we're not going to throw the lightsaber away just yet, folks. Don't worry about it. This seems a little bit more interesting. And Kylo having the debate, the internal struggle about whether or like how dark can you be, can he really do what Darth Vader did, seems a little bit better laid out in this, especially how it kind of culminates with a fight against Darth Vader, which I think would have been freaking amazing.
That would have been, if they pulled it off, obviously, but like that would have been like a theater erupting reveal if you find out that he's actually facing Vader. It's cool. It's like it almost seemed like it was kind of like calling back to the cave scene from The Empire Strikes Back. Oh, absolutely. But like for the completely wrong reasons in this case.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like everything that we get in the bullet points here is a very mirrored journey to what Luke went through in Empire, but Ren's doing it. Where it's going to, well, I will go find the master of the person from before that I can't be, that I, you know, that is unfortunately dead, but this time by my own hands.
I'll find my Yoda.
Yeah. So he goes and like meets the dark version of Yoda, which is this kind of like actual genuine monster as best as we can tell. And he does have his scene in the cave that goes very differently than how it goes for Luke. Being the Vader wins the fight.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the fact that Vader wins the fight in this, and I don't think this is fanboyism. I don't think it's like Vader's better than Kylo Ren. I like the struggle Kylo Ren is. I think it's very unique and very unusual to have a story about a villain. Air quotes. I was doing air quotes on that. Although he definitely does villainous things, but someone who is struggling so much with who he is this kind of, and we've talked about this since Force Awakens. This. Oh, God, I don't want to say this. This modern, how do I put this? I don't want to say, like, he commits violence in a school setting. He is a very, very specific new form of fan for the fascist ideal that never was. If that makes sense.
No, like, I get you.
I don't want to like...
Like a wannabe?
No.
He's very... He enjoys the dark aesthetic. And what
if the Empire are Nazis, then he's a neo-Nazi in many ways. Yeah, right. That's kind of like,
exactly.
I don't want to do this because it's like, you know, it's way it's too not a serious one-to-one a
comparison.
And it's like, too serious a topic belittle with Star Wars.
I get
references.
What you mean. It's just
but there's a little bit of that, and to see him kind of like pushing up against this wall of evil, and having someone push back and be like, you don't like, especially because apparently it's described as being brutal, the fight with Vader, and then he does not do well. This Vader would never be proud of you, right? Mm. The version of Vader, the non-redeemed version of Vader that Kylo Ren is worshiping, would never love him for what he is. So I think I think there's a potential, a lot of power in that scene. Mm. And maybe Pete will back me up on this one. I don't know if I completely like this arc compared to what we got in Skywalker.
I'm not entirely sure. I'm always a passionate fan of redemption arcs.
Yeah.
I love... In almost any case, watching the villain get redeemed. Mm-hmm. I do find it kind of interesting to explore the idea of a almost failed redemption arc.
Okay.
You know, where you see him go through the opportunities to redeem himself.
Yeah.
And not follow through, come up short, or even just seeing the opposite of him trying to damn himself, essentially.
Yeah. You know,
trying to work to be more evil, and the degrees of success, if you want to call it that.
Cause it's a shame because we're not quite sure what happens and how far he gets to whatever degree. We're not sure if he's pushed further down that dark path, or does he make those decisions on his own? Because we do get this whole character that we don't know much about in this new script. Mm. We're not sure what path they're taking on, other than that at some point Kylo does kill him. I think that was in the bullet points that he kills Vol or whatever his name is.
Tor Valum
is
the new master of the Sith.
I think at some point that happens in the script.
I'm not entirely sure, but yeah.
Yeah. But we're not sure how far that journey goes, and because there are many attempts, from what we understand in the bullet points, that he does have to come back, and is the Vader fight one of those attempts? Because immediately after, at least from what they're describing, he says, and then we immediately go to Force Ghosts trying to say, hey, Ben, come on.
The image of other people trying to, the other Jedi not abandoning him and actually trying to redeem him. I think it was maybe Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Luke who were trying to redeem him. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been awesome if Anakin would have been there too. There's a lot of things here that potentially could have been great. I'll say this because we brought it up. In Skywalker, what I do enjoy, I like, and Rey and Kylo do have a lot of interactions with this. There is a conflict between the two of them. She is part of what undoes him. It's not just fighting. It's not like fanboyism. Yeah. I want Vader to beat up Ren, and that's it. Why does Rey have to be in there? Like, she is involved in it, but I do like, and apparently the part with Han Solo is part of Han Solo in this that he does do the redemption. I do like that aspect in Rise. I like Kylo Ren's story in Rise up into his death on the Death Star, him throwing his blade away, awesome. The thing with Leia, awesome. Whole thing is good. And then it feels sort of like, well, how do we get Kylo Ren to the end of the movie? Let's have him run in. It's literally when he stops having dialogue. It feels weird.
The next time we see him, his next dialogue is ow.
Yeah. So in that respect, similar to what Pete was saying, I think there are things that are salvageable from the Kylo Ren redemption arc.
Right.
But we never got to see what a draft of this, where they're pulling in some stuff from Rise.
Yeah, right. Because all we know is that they fail. We don't know how and to what degree, and
while we're on this topic, Palpatine is in this, as is Tor Valum, this what people are referring to as a Lovecraftian monster who was the master of the Sith, who was Palpatine's teacher. I like the fact that the Palpatine aspect was a little bit more streamlined in this. Cool. I like the fact that Palpatine was in this from the beginning. They had planned him to some degree from the start. Without even reading the script, prefer Palpatine in Rise of Skywalker. I think cut the middleman out, drop Tor Valum. I don't know if he's cool or not, but there was a lot of good meat on that bone.
I almost hate to agree with you on this one, but I feel like it would have streamlined things a little bit more rather than introduce a new character. I like new characters, I do. And this having a Lovecraftian monster be pretty interesting to have as but also to just have him in there and then get killed off, as we find out happens.
Yeah.
It almost feels like, did you just make another Snoke just to do it? Just pull another Snoke, essentially.
I feel like Palpatine's inclusion in the last movie would have been taken a lot better if he didn't have Rise of Skywalker Palpatine's story arc.
Oh yeah, it's the granddaughter
thing. I think that was what soured people the most, because if Palpatine just showed up, people might be like, oh, okay, bringing back another character from the dead, whatever. But I think brought into this context and what he's actually doing in this script, I think people would have been a lot more found it a lot more interesting.
Yeah. And I do understand Burnett's complaint, if I'm getting his name right, I think I am.
Yeah.
Getting his complaint about saying that, immediately my thought is, how did he survive? I'm like, Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong.
A lot of people have said that. I've never gotten that. And I'm not saying people are wrong. But I never got that. I mean, space magic is how he survived.
I'm with you, Frank. It's like, I can get it. Like, I can get behind it. How did he survive? He's magic.
Yeah, space magic.
He's evil. He's the incarnation of evil.
Here's the
somehow
thing.
He survived. I get it.
Weirdly enough, I did have a problem with the dagger, though. I was like, because it felt a little weird. Like, were you planting fetch quests? Because it was also one that was very specific about the damage. So you have to imagine a Palpatine who somehow survives the explosion of the Death Star, makes it to the planet. He's like, all right, well, got to start looking at what this thing looks like. And just, I'm going to do-it-yourself dagger this, make it look a little ancient, because it's apparently also an ancient dagger. Then I'm going to dump it on some plant. Like, that's when the grit, like I said before, there's a little bit of grit that makes me go, oh, slows down my acceptance of the story. But overall, I think his role in Skywalker, instead of the Torvalum thing, maybe would work. So, listen, there's so much more to get through. But I think the next thing is... Rey's, because we've barely touched on Rey's arc, Rey's story, instead of being about whether she thinks she is inherently evil because of her ancestry, which is half of her story in Skywalker, because it takes about half the movie for her to realize that. She's just, you know, coming to terms with her own power at the first half.
Right.
This one, it's dealing directly with Last Jedi, you are nothing. Like, this is something that she brings up to Leia. She talks about it. She has issues with it. She feels a connection to Kylo Ren. Can't explain it. Finn is doing his, like, don't talk to that guy. I'm the only guy. You're like, I don't know what the hell he was doing. But there's a lot of that there. Again, I don't want to keep boiling this down to, like, this is better than the other thing. But I do... It's the grit aspect. I noticed in the movie that we got how much was, like, it felt like backpedaling. This, because there isn't any, it's just furthering that story, saying we are going to deal with what it means to be a Jedi in this post-prequel world, right? Because, like, people who are fans of the prequels always tell me that the Jedi are jerks.
And we say that in Last Jedi. We bring it up, and Luke is kind of like, I mean, you know, it's their fault that things got as bad as they did. And it'd be nice to have some doubt about it. Like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I'm good enough for it. And also, I don't even know if I should be doing this anyway. Because she goes through a gambit of emotions about, like, self-worth, as well as the idea of, like, were these people worth listening to anyway? Like, you know, masters throughout the centuries. And, like, I'm supposed to listen to all this stuff. And, like, it's a lot to take in and a lot to take on. And I like that the character had to deal with any of that.
Yeah. What is the prophecy of the two for the Sith?
The Sith.
The balance of the Force. Like, all these stuff have been around since the beginning, and none of it really tracks. It really is, like, in the original trilogy, and I'm a big original trilogy fan, I'm sorry.
It's fine.
But I'm a big, like, I beat that drum a lot. But in the original, when it's a fairy tale, Jedi are good, Sith, which aren't even named, are bad, light side, dark side, the end, easy.
Yeah.
Right? Very simple. Balance just means good, somehow. It's not balancing, like, it's little good, little evil. You're okay. That's not how you left Return of the Jedi.
Nope.
It balance somehow meant things are good.
Yeah.
The Force, the world is great. Don't worry about it. Don't think about it too much. Prequels came along and started thinking, like, we gotta figure this one out. It's a little weird. And, you know, it makes it really complicated. This movie at least attempts to address it in a way. I love the whole, the Palpatine's line of a thousand generations of Sith live in me.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's bad. The temple, badass. There's a lot of badass
stuff. And again,
stuff.
It makes sense of, like, why the Sith have their weird rule. If it's just kind of like, well, we die by the
it's
hands
like
of our...
It's like Highlander, where they just keep absorbing each other. Yeah, fine, cool. But, like, it leaves a weird... Like, the end of Last Jedi leaves you like, are the Jedi bad? No, they're not, because I'm Rey, and I'm not, or Luke is not going to be the Last Jedi. Rey is going to take over. Great, cool. Next movie comes on, it's like, let's not really consider it too much. Jedis are just the good guys. Mm. They're all going to show up as a teamwork effort at the end. This one, I mean, the line, a thousand masters so eager to tell us how to live. That's pretty powerful.
That's a...
For a thing from Star Wars.
Yeah.
I think it's... it had the potential, especially in the terms of world building. Mm. Like, what do you do afterwards?
Yeah.
Skywalker was actually, I guess, pretty good at wrapping things up. I don't need to hear another story.
Nope. Yeah.
But this kind of leaves me going like, oh yeah, okay, cool. Well, and gotta- Leia telling her she's something new.
That's cool. Yeah.
Interesting.
One thing that I actually thought was really neat, speaking of Rey, is that there's still part of Rey's arc where she thinks she, like, Kylo can be redeemed.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, so that was still existing in this original draft. Like, there's a line that where she's talking to Finn, and like, I think when Finn's doing it, don't talk to this guy anymore.
Yeah.
But Finn's like, oh, like, forget Kylo. He can't be changed. And like Rey says, everyone can be changed or something like that.
And you prove.
Cool. Yes.
It ties into like, I'm a stormtrooper and I'm redeemed. Oh, I have to eat crow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, there's also another really interesting line where she's talking to Leia about it. And like, but I can sense good in him, and Leia says, "There's good in everybody, but you know, so yeah. what? Like, it's like they can still do the wrong thing. They can still like it doesn't matter." Like, I'm like, yeah, holy crow! That to a certain extent, that's a big thing to say and a lesson that you should teach people. Like, yeah, there's good in everybody, but that doesn't excuse everything. That doesn't make it all of a sudden okay just because there's something in there that you see in them that. It doesn't mean that it's all gone or that it's not. That's cool. That's interesting.
Either Pete has a poignant thing to say or he has something horrible to say.
You want to go for horrible?
No, let's do the Patreon content for the horrible. All right, Al, yes, I agree. That was interesting. And something that I think Matt and I kind of geeked out about a little earlier. There was the big MacGuffin at this point is, as you know, Rey is dealing with whether or not Kylo could be redeemed, whether what's her place in this great balance of the Force. Kylo is trying his best to finish what his grandfather started. The heroes are being rebels and in the resistance. As all that's happened, the major process is basically the First Order has clamped down resistance. There is no resistance because no one can communicate, but they find this MacGuffin, right? It's the only MacGuffin that comes up, but it's tied in directly to the storyline.
Only one MacGuffin.
I know, right?
How do you even know it's Star Wars?
On Coruscant, there is a beacon, a Force beacon, that will actually reach out to a bunch of planets. I think it was like, whatever, 50 planets.
Yeah.
And it could spread out from there and there and there. Basically, what you're getting at right here is that moment, that really cool moment in Skywalker where everyone comes to the Resistance aid, has some backstory to it. There's like, I'm here for some reason, right?
Yeah.
With honestly, if Lando had said, I'm here for some reason, I'd be forgiven. I'm here somehow. Just great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love it. But in this story, it's Leia who's sending them out to send this Force message. That's Leia's thing. I need your
help me, the entire universe. I need you're my only hope.
Yeah.
Yes, and that moment is super cool. Compared to like, we can't let that ship with the beacon on it get out first. You know, there's a little bit more of a fun in there. The fact that Lando, again, this is really poignant. Lando goes out and recruits the smugglers, right?
Mm.
Maybe we don't know this. We haven't.
Bossk is in it for Gus.
We don't know the way it played out. But you know, Lando in this one, we kind of fan fiction headcanon that he was the one who got everybody on board.
Right.
But in this one, him getting the smugglers, the people on the fringe of Star Wars, which never really like in the end of Return of the Jedi, you see Ewoks dancing. And you see dancings across all the planets in certain versions. But, like, you don't really know. Is, like, slavery still a thing on Tatooine, though? Is that, like, was that an Empire thing? It didn't look like an Empire thing. It looked like it was a thing that Tatooine just does.
Yep. No, that was established that it was something that Tatooine just does.
Yeah.
Because that predated the Empire.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, and then the prequels bring in and make it even more like, oh, this is when the Jedi were at their height. Slavery was everywhere.
Yeah.
And possibly droids are slaves, depending on how you determine whether they're sentient. So that all that's in the air, but with this moment of like it's I know I'm doing fan wank right now, but the idea that Lando went out and got the smugglers, the people on the fringe, and saying the fringe, it's like Last Jedi. I mean, it didn't solve slavery by having Mop Boy use the Force, but it made me think something bigger is out there.
Yeah.
Mm.
And this kind of makes me feel the same way. And the fact that Mop Boy even apparently is brought up,
back. Yeah.
Is called back in this is like, it makes me feel like this is a cohesive three-part trilogy.
Right? Oh my gosh, your thought.
But yes, so there's a lot of interesting things in this one. I don't know if there's you could read synopsises online. There's a anybody have anything else that they want to pull up?
I want to say there's a couple weird moments in this that like gave me like some of that grit you were talking about. Like there's apparently a reveal that Kylo killed Rey's parents, which I feel is just the lowest stakes reveal of all time, where it's just, it's really...
Kylo killed nobody?
Yeah, really. Like I killed these people that abandoned you for drinking money, and actually was to no benefit of my own, so I'm not sure why I did that. But, like, I mean, it says at the behest of Snoke, so this had to be before he knew who she was. Yeah. It's just a really weird...
That's one of those things, like, it depends on how it played off, right?
I feel like that would have been, like... need another pass through editing.
Yes. Either remove entirely. I think it kind of has value, especially if it was played off of the, remember this Kylo Ren guy that we keep, he's killed a lot of people on camera, but for some reason we kind of think Adam Driver's hot. So maybe we're just giving him a pass. Well, guess what? Here's something like, here's a flashback to him killing a bunch of innocent people on this planet as part of his job. And guess who it happens to be? The parents of a character you like. Maybe now you care. And all the Reylo fans would be like, no, we're fine. You could kill my daddy.
But I'm... It's
Luke never told you who killed your parents.
It's God. Anyway.
But yeah, it could also come off completely like, ugh.
Yeah, like it's such a non-thing. And like, it's a shame, like, because it feels like when he's reading off the finale, it's very rushed through. And I'm like, no, this is the part I wanted to hear about. Like, all you hear is that Kylo's kind of defeated and Ben is extinguished in some way or another deep within him that you're not really sure how that goes. And also another thing I wasn't a big fan of was like at one point Kylo gets hit with a force lightning bolt from like a security system on a holocron. And he gets, like, weird purple veins and, like, has to have Mandalorian armor grafted to him.
That seemed a little, like
yeah, that seemed like a bit no, much.
We're good. Although it's not too dissimilar to what we've seen in Rise, but maybe it would have been. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I would have been fine if we just...
I'm okay with that, yeah. I liked... So, for Finn's arc, I guess we'll go through everyone. Finn and Poe's arc as now definitive people. Although, I guess Poe gets... the least that's mentioned in the story.
Yeah.
But you get the idea that Finn, Poe, and Rose are all resistance people. Yeah,
right. There's some allusion to Poe having scenes with Leia that we don't know about, but that's kind of about it.
And there's something about his grandfather being on a planet. Like, it was his old bullets. But anyways, there's the Finn arc of helping Imperial defectors... or First Order defectors, rise up in Coruscant. They punk up all this equipment that they got from the Star Destroyer and all the things that were on the planet that no one was using, and then they rise up and fight. I like Jonna and in Rise of Skywalker, and I think the scenes where she has with Finn, I think it's Jonna. The scenes that she has with Finn are cool. But there's literally nothing that tells you these are stormtroopers, other than the character saying, "I used to be a stormtrooper."
Right.
There's something.
All these other people used to be stormtroopers.
We look like normal people now, like any other star, and we're riding horses. And there's nothing about this that feels stormtrooper-y, including like we're not even using a lot of stormtrooper knowledge to get in. Like none of it. There's
we hit things that we shoot.
Yeah. But like none of that. It feels like it could have with the concept art we've seen. Could have been much more impactful if you saw stormtroopers fighting stormtroopers. And it gives people an in. I really think there was incredible value in letting the people in the fandom who are like, I really like the Imperial aesthetic. I went to Disney World this past weekend, and we went to Galaxy's Edge, and I could have built my own lightsaber. Mm. And one of the things I got to choose was whether I wanted to be evil. At Disney World. And I'm like, you know what? Not really. And the stormtroopers that were walking around the First Order part were asking people for their papers. They were being very aggressive. It was fun. It was part of the fun. Yeah. And I don't mind. It's like in being in a LARP, they're bad guys. Yeah. But like, it also feels weird. It feels weird that there's an entire aesthetic. I actually did build my own droid, and I picked like darker colors for the droid. And it was like, this looks a little bit like, yeah, I know people. I got really upset too. This felt a little bit like BB hate or BB hate. And I looked at it, I'm like, I don't want. And I remember telling my wife, going like, this is an evil droid. And she's like, droids aren't evil. You just have to raise him right, and this is ridiculous. I don't want to have this conversation with you. Like, she tried her best to talk me down. And I needed to be talked down because I was like, this is a little too, like, First Order. I don't, yeah. This is too Imperial. She's like, it's a toy. It's a remote control toy. Stop it. But she, for her first attempt, was like, no, it's how we raise it.
Oh my God.
And fun.
Bless her.
Yeah, yeah. It was good. It was good. But, like, I think there would have been a lot to that scene where that you could have, like, redeemed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Chewie flies an X-Wing.
Yeah. That's cool.
That's
TIE Fighter?
No, X-Wing.
Yeah, no,
it was
X-Wing.
An X-Wing.
Oh, okay.
I may have summed it up wrong and said TIE Fighter, although Chewie and X-Wing is pretty great.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's really cool.
And my favorite thing from that was described, this Luke blocking a lightsaber blade, Force Ghost Luke, it's another little awesome thing to do. And I guess they kind of kept it. I just realized in Skywalker, he catches a lightsaber.
Yep. Yeah.
The one interesting thing that other people have brought up, because I'm not a big fighting guy person and fighting style person, Rey adopting both lightsabers and to her staff.
Yeah, the double-bladed
thing.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
That sounds pretty neat.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like about this, and I think we kind of played around with it as we were doing it. I honestly think a lot could have been pulled from Skywalker, from Rise of Skywalker, and made this even better. I think there's a few powerful scenes that could have polished this up even more interestingly from the synopsis we got.
It's interesting because this comes off the heels of the Abrams cut discussion, where there was the whole thing about Abrams and some of the cast are saying this wasn't the movie that we shot, or
that we 22 minutes were cut out or something like that is the last thing I remember hearing.
But it's and it comes right off the heels of that, really. And it's an interesting concept of going even further back and, you know, what would Trevorrow have done, or what was Trevorrow at least planning? Not necessarily what would have happened, as we've discussed. It does make you wonder, it's a very big what if scenario to just keep going further back into the timeline.
As much as I really love the concepts brought up, or at least what we've heard and the bullet points. But I guess my biggest thing is it's just bullet points and the way filmmaking works, things change all the time.
Yeah.
So, and actually, honestly, there's a part of me that thinks, man, if they actually did it like this, but it's still bombed, people would not shut up even more about Last Jedi. It's see, we followed up on Last Jedi. And it turned out, and here's how it turned out. So honestly, a part of me is almost a little glad that it was never me, because just because of the fear of if it didn't work out, then things would have been so.
Fear leads to darkness.
I know.
Fear leads to suffering.
Yeah.
That's it.
I will say in my only argument as to why I would prefer the theoretical better film, not even necessarily if it would be to exist, is because it's better. I think it's more important to have a better piece of art to look back on for generations to go back to, to see as time goes on, as opposed to having something that wasn't as good.
That's true.
What I like the most about this cut and the potential of it being mixed up with Skywalker or whatever is that it felt like the one thing that I left Skywalker feeling was I'm shocked that I saw so many seams. I've never really noticed the seams in a Star Wars movie, possibly, because I grew up with them and you, and I'm good at suspending my disbelief, but I never really saw the seams, even though as a kid or as a young adult, I guess, or whatever, in college, I would be oh yeah, Lucas really wrote 9 parts of this, sure. You always kind of take it tongue in cheek and what have you, but it wasn't as obvious that there, quote, was no plan or nothing that we would consider a plan until after that movie was over. And I was like, there is a lot that just didn't seem like it was thought out. And this makes me feel like, you know what? Maybe it wasn't the story I would have told. I like it a lot, actually, but somebody may not have wanted to tell the story, but it felt like a story. At no point do I look at it and think, this is them backpedaling. This is them trying to fix things.
At least for me, the seams really show up, because these seams are a result of certain decisions and directions that just make them seem a lot more blatant to me.
Yeah, there's just the notes.
Yeah.
From that movie seemed a little harder, and that makes this seem more.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hopeful. It does make
It does make it seem more appealing. It's still. Let's also remember, there's a lot crammed in these bullet points. It could have been just as press the gas pedal and go forward and don't stop as Skywalker was, because there's just so much. Pacing could have been a big issue.
There's we started off this podcast saying we'd never really know, and you never really will know unless they decide to reboot Star Wars in the next couple of years and then for some reason stick with the script. I think one of the things I will point out, rather than wrap up the show, I want to point out that the thing that I find also very odd is we were given the impression that Trevorrow was taken off this film because of there was something fundamentally wrong with his vision. We got the same thing in Han Solo, right?
Right.
And this doesn't feel fundamentally wrong. This doesn't seem other than maybe I could see them saying, hey, we need Kylo Ren being redeemed at this.
Right.
Right. And I don't think you have to change much to do that.
No.
Certainly not as much as they did.
No.
So that's really the thing that makes me a little uncomfortable. When I look at this and I'm like, if this movie didn't make any sense, or it was a completely different genre, or whatever, if it just failed, then I could understand why Lucasfilm said, no, we can't do this. But this feels like a movie. And the differences between where we ended up in Rise and where we ended up here seem relatively minor. So why?
Yeah. Any number of things, because we have that whole thing with Iger that was going on around the same time as far as what was going on with Disney corporate. And there were a thousand and one different reasons as to, sorry.
Just to refresh my memory, Trevorrow dropped out. He wasn't.
It was mutually agreed. Yeah. Mm. That's how they
kept butting heads, apparently, to the point where he backed out.
We don't know. Mutually agreed. Yeah. We don't know if it was over my dead body, will you ever change one lick of my script?
Yeah.
But it seems unlikely, because then you're you were still given writing credit, and they changed everything about your script. So why would that be? We don't know.
Yeah, there's, and we probably never will.
Unless somebody says, tell all.
Because I'm thinking there's a good chance that if they decided after he left, okay, now we're bringing JJ in, and JJ looks at the script and says, look, I'm just not feeling it. I can't direct this script.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter, that Trevorrow's script was good and worked. It wouldn't have worked if JJ directed that script.
I can see that, and I can agree with that. It's very hard. I can imagine it being very, very hard, actually, to sort of just, pick up off someone else's work and just have to do...
The director has to feel the script to make it work.
I could see that, but I also don't... I think J.J. Abrams is a competent director, and I think he, given a script that he was okay with doing, I think he can do it.
Fair.
And I know the argument is whether or not he was okay, but I think it's fair enough to look at that and be like, well, that's my issue with this, is that the only...
He should have been okay with it.
If the only thing you were willing to do was your own... If that's really... We've talked about this with Rose before. If you cannot stomach Rose and think of any idea for her, and the only thing you can do is leave her on the cutting room floor, then take the flack. Say that you did not do a good job of telling a story for the people who cared about that.
Right.
And I think that's true of... That's fire. That's you can't do anything more than that, saying all right, you've announced you couldn't do it, and we're disappointed in that. But I don't even want to end it on a disappointing note, because it's totally fascinating to me to talk about movies that could have been. And the last thing I think I want to bring up is that Star Wars is probably the first and most infamous cuts came in 97, when the original trilogy got back into theaters, and it was the special editions, right?
Yep.
We're gonna fix Star Wars and add a bunch of stuff that we should have been in there in the beginning, but I couldn't because of the technical problems at the time. That was a major controversy for years. And it was the first film, I think, that really had this before E.T. digitally removing guns and whatever.
It's still a controversy now.
Oh, because
we don't have original cuts because
they're still doing it. They're still editing things.
Still editing.
But I find it fascinating that Star Wars, who started off the modern world of merchandising, probably started off the modern concept of a saga and a prequel, and started off the whole special editions, remake a movie after it's already been out. Will Star Wars be the one where it's you know how you said you could only have one movie that wraps up a trilogy? Well, guess what? They're remaking all of them. Kinda, sorta. Like, imagine if special editions become the thing fans clamor for now. God. Everyone could have their own version of every Star Wars movie.
Listen, hold on 2 seconds here. We would never in a million years think this film would be a reality, and I still don't think that. Mm-hmm. But holy crow, imagine if it did become that. Because I would never have thought they would have walked back like Last Jedi as hard as they did. That was never in my mind. I never thought that was going to be a thing. I never thought they would listen to fans that badly. But could you imagine if all of a sudden, for the first time, like Disney went, just make it again. Like, I'll just do it.
And people would lose their minds.
I don't know how I would think about that. I don't know.
Right?
Shocked. Would it be a bad precedent?
I don't know. I don't know how to feel. I would not know how to feel about it.
You'd almost have to do it for all of them. Maybe that's how they would start it. They were like, we're going to reboot. That almost means like that would almost be the more acceptable version. They were like, we're going to redo the prequels this time with a more consistent feel and look. And then it's going to go into the original trilogy. You know how it would really work? If they did them as animated movies. I think if they're going to reboot any of the Star Wars movies as animated movies, I think people would be a little bit more accepting.
People would definitely accept an animated version of A New Hope before a remake.
Before a remake, definitely.
Live-action remake.
Now that you mentioned animated movies, I feel like this is something similar has happened with like anime, like Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh my gosh, right!
Star Wars Brotherhood!
They're redoing the story of Evangelion,
right?
Like they had a kind of revisit to that.
Yeah.
So like it's not without precedent. It's not without in media,
but it's not without any major precedent.
Yes.
So to basically say
this would be like, yeah.
I'm not saying I want that. I'm just saying it'd be crazy, and Disney
anybody's gonna reboot or do a Disney remake. Disney has literally been banking on that for the last decade? How long has it been? I feel like a Cinderella movie was the first one that made it. Then it's Aladdin from a year ago or two. And then Lion King.
They've been doing the live action remakes.
Unlive action remake. What kind of horror world have we in?
Wait, I've got an even deeper one. What if they start branching out franchises? You start doing sequels to The Last Jedi. Sequels to Rise of Skywalker running parallel to sequels to Duel of the Fates.
Oh man.
That would be crazy.
This is like comic book territory.
But it's not as though that's without precedent either. Not major precedent though.
This is insane.
Like Citizen Kane 2A and Citizen Kane 2B.
I remember
that. Or Highlander 2 and then Highlander.
The Mandela Effect Extreme. the McCulkey Effect. What is it? McCulkey? How do you pronounce it?
McClunky?
Malucky?
Macaulay Culkin?
The new line Greedo says when he gets shot this time. Speaking of getting shot this way, time and ending on a deep, deep geek level. Like, we were really... Wow. I think we almost pulled it off for, like, most of this podcast. And at the end, we're like, what if they do this? Speaking of that, we hope you enjoy the podcast on the Nonproductive Network. Please like, follow, and subscribe. And do us a special favor. Just for a few more days, we're doing our survey, our year, opening year of survey. Go to non-productive.com/survey. Tell us a little bit about your own listening tastes and what have you. And you will actually be entered into a prize. We have a lot of stuff in the prize closet. We're going to dump all our garbage on you. No, actually, despite saying that, please still fill out the survey. And thank you all for listening. We're going to have probably an answer podcast to this one. What if this podcast had better people on it?
The reboot.
The reboot, yes.
This has been a Nonproductive Media presentation. Executive producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Nonproductive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.